Thank you, Dave. Happy Sabbath, brethren. I want to thank everybody that's prayed for Anna. She's not out of the woods yet. She's made some improvement, but not as much as we had hoped. So anyway, your continued prayers would be much appreciated. The message today that I'm giving, I got a name for it. It's called God's Blessings. It'll be sort of a three-part message. I'm going to start out about U.S. and Britain and how we've been blessed. I'm going to shift over to Christ's opinions in Matthew 24. And then in the end, we're going to conclude on a little bit of prophecy in Matthew 24. You won't have to wait to go home to read anything in Deuteronomy 28, because that's where we're going to start. Roy was talking about that a little earlier. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 2, God promises this to his people. All these blessings will come upon you and accompany you if you obey the eternal your God. You'll be blessed in the city and blessed in the country. How great is that? Blessed in the city and blessed in the country. Jobs for everybody. Jobs for the farmers, jobs for the city folk. Just a wonderful blessing. Well, from there, we go to verse 7, and God granted us military victories. Military victories. We'll see that here. The Eternal will grant that the enemies who rise up against you will be defeated before you. They'll come at you in one direction and flee from you in seven. World War II, America fought a war over in Europe against Germany and Italy. That war was fought on land, and God gave us victory there. The same time, America fought another war in the Far East with Japan, and this was on the Pacific Ocean. There were a lot of sea battles, and he gave us victory in the seas as well. So we see that God has kept his promise and gave America victories in both areas. One of the interesting things we can see God's hand in, particularly in the Pacific, is that there were no aircraft carriers in the port of Pearl Harbor on December the 7th. I wonder why that was. Number two, the ammunition dumps at Pearl Harbor were left perfectly intact, so that every submarine, every cruiser, every destroyer could go into the harbor and rearm immediately, because we didn't have to ship any arms back over there. The same with the fuel storage. The fuel storage is all left intact. The Japanese did not bomb any fuel storage. We had every drop of fuel left after the attack that we had before that. We can see God's hand in these kinds of things. Not only that, what about the dry docks? There was no dry dock damage whatsoever. So by lunchtime, any dry docks that were open and the destroyers and whatnot that needed to be repaired there could be pulled in and repaired, and they could begin working on them that very day. God also allowed America to break the German code, also allowed America to have the Japanese naval code, but nobody got our codes because we used Native American Navajo language to converse back and forth. All of these things are the hand of God from my point of view. God granted Britain and America radar first, long before anyone else had it. And that allowed us ample time for defending ourselves, particularly in Britain. 6 months after Pearl Harbor, the second battle took place out in the Pacific with the Japanese. And it took place almost to the day, June 4th through June 7th. It was a four-day battle that took place out there. And this particular battle was the turning point in the war. This was the second battle that we engaged the Japanese out there, and basically they couldn't come back from it. Historian John Keegan called Midway the most stunning and decisive battle in the history of naval warfare. That was the turning point And God gave us victory, just like he promised in Deuteronomy 28. Japan lost four big aircraft carriers, all of which had attacked Pearl Harbor. What does God say? He says, vengeance belongs to me. They were all sunk, as one heavy cruiser was sunk and another heavy cruiser badly damaged. They miscalculated the fact that the Yorktown, who was damaged, heavily damaged in the Coral Sea, was even going to be available. When it came back to the dry docks that they failed to destroy, the Americans began working night and day feverishly to get this thing up and going. And it wasn't ready to go to battle yet. So the crews that were repairing this thing were sent on board along with all the aircraft and all the ammunition and everything that they needed and the fuel supplies and the food and whatnot, and they repaired this ship on the way to battle at Midway. And of course it was sunk at that point, but it helped take out the armada that the Japanese had put out. God gave us plenty of raw materials. He gave us coal, oil, iron, steel production, manufacturing plants by the hundreds and hundreds, tooling, welding, machining, and so on. God also gave us protection, and still does, between the Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean. There's oceans on either side of us, and it's very hard for an enemy to come make a landing and take over a country, particularly when it can be well defended like America. Not only that, Japan had the largest battleship ever built. It had 18-inch guns, and God granted victory over that particular ship on April 7th of 1945. These guns were 18-inch, which means that from the end of my elbow here to the end of my fingers, I could put my arm in the gun barrel, one of those gun barrels on that boat. It was so massive. Well, God promises were filled in a little different way. Let's go to Genesis 24. Genesis 24, this is where Rebekah's family sends her off to marry someone she's never seen. Goes off to marry Isaac, Abraham's son. And this is an unusual blessing. I thought this was interesting for myself, so I decided to include it. Genesis 24, and beginning in verse 59. Well, let's begin in verse 57 instead. Abraham's servant has gotten there, and he's told the family about Abraham, about his wealth, and about Isaac as much as he could. He's given some jewelry to Rebekah, and he stayed there overnight. So he wants to leave right away. Now that this mission is accomplished, he wants to leave. He doesn't want to stick around. He doesn't want to stay 10 days like they asked him to. He said, no, I want to go. I want to go. So they said, well, let's call the girl. Let's ask her about it. So they called Rebekah, and they said to her, will you go with this man? Now bear in mind, he's a total stranger. She's only known him for maybe 12 hours, maybe 14 hours. She's never seen him before in his life. What happens? She says, yes, I'll go. I'll go. I'll be happy to go. So they sent their sister Rebekah on her way, along with her nurse, and Abraham's servant and his men. And they blessed Rebekah and said to her, our sister, may you increase to thousands upon thousands, and listen to this, may your offspring possess the gates of their enemies. We think of a gate as something to keep our children on the lawn. Have a latch up high, and they've got to stay in the house, in the lawn. Or we think of a gate as protecting them from getting into the swimming pool. Or we think of a gate, like out on a farm where I came from, to keep cattle in so that they don't run around in somebody else's pastures. And the same with hogs. We had hogs. I grew up with them. And to keep them out of certain areas, you put gates in. You could go through, pickups and trucks could go through, but they were kept in a pen. But the Eternal blessed us with something called sea gates. sea gates, and I'm going to name a few of them that we had at World War II. Some of them we still have, but some of them we have already lost. Some of them we've already lost. God's blessing at the outset of World War II, we had control over the Panama Canal. The Panama Canal, in which a lot of goods and services and war material went through the Panama Canal during the war. American battleships were made so that there was only like 2.5-3 foot of clearance on each side so that the big battleships we had could go through that canal. They were made very narrow. The beam on them was short enough to go through the canal. Well, Britain had total control of the Suez Canal, and that has been lost. We no longer have that, or they no longer have that. We controlled Singapore. Singapore was controlled by the British during World War II. That's all gone. The United States controlled the Philippines and had a massive air base in Manila. Not anymore. Cape Horn, the British controlled in South America. How much control they exercise now, I'm not sure. Cape Hope, around South Africa, they've lost some control over that. Gibraltar, the Mediterranean Sea, that could bottle up the Germans and keep them from going in there. They controlled, the British controlled that. How much control they have today? I can't say. The Dardanelles and the Black Sea and the Bosporus and the Black Sea as well, they controlled that. The British controlled those things. It wasn't very wide. Those two channels are very narrow. So Hitler or the Soviet Union could not go in and out of there if the British didn't want them to. The English Channel, the British controlled that thing as well. But how much control they exercise today over that, something I don't know about that part. Let's go back to the blessings of Deuteronomy 28 and verse 8. The Eternal will send a blessing on your barns and on everything you put your hand to do. And God has kept his promise about that. Talk about blessings. Where else can you go in the world and own your own home? Not very many places. Here in America, you can still buy your own home and own it. How many cars do we have today? Two cars, three cars, maybe more. How many television sets? How much of this stuff did we have during World War II? It was immense. We just had a lot of blessings. Good jobs. Employment was very high. 3% usually, or more was about all, or less was about all the unemployment that we had. Continuing on in verse 11, the Lord will grant you abundant prosperity. Compared to everybody else, it's amazing how much we had. The church believed that at one time in the early 50s, that America had consumed about close to 50% of all production on the earth went to America and Britain. It's astounding. Just astounding. It's not that way anymore, but it was at that time. Verse 12. The Lord will open the heavens, the storehouse of his bounty, and send rain on your land in due season, and bless the work of your hands. You will lend money to many nations, but you will borrow from none. I can remember everything virtually in the area that I grew up in was paid for cash at that time, or by check or whatever. Putting things on credit was just sort of unheard of. But today it's the other way around. And I remember Gardner Ted Armstrong years ago making a comment that America went from being owed the most money as a nation in the world to owing the most money to other nations in about a 12-month period of time. I couldn't believe it. We were owed the most money. Turns around, we have to pay the most money. It was amazing. We turned that around, and now here we are owing great debt today. That's one of the things that our forefathers said, don't get involved in, stay away from debt. But unfortunately, we're not doing that anymore. The Eternal will make you the head in verse 13 and not the tail. If you pay attention to the commands of the Eternal your God that I give you this day. We're going to end this chapter in verse 14. We're going to end it with an ominous warning. Verse 14 says, "Do not turn aside from any of the commands I give you today, to the right hand or to the left, following other gods and serving them." I want to include another blessing. This will be in Genesis 48. Genesis 48 and verse 2. Genesis 48 and verse 2. Joseph is visiting his ailing father, Jacob, and takes his two sons with him, Manasseh and Ephraim. Verse 48, an unusual thing happens here. Excuse me, in chapter 48, in verse 5 and 6, Jacob claims his two grandsons as his own sons, which is unusual. He didn't do that with any of the other family members, but he did it with Joseph's two sons. Let's read verse 5 and 6. "Now then, your two sons born to you in Egypt before I came will be reckoned as mine. Ephraim and Manasseh will be mine. Any children born after them will be yours." It's unusual. The Bible doesn't explain why he did that. But nevertheless, a blessing came upon the two boys as well. We know of Ephraim and Manasseh as coming into being the United States and Britain. Let's go down to verse 8. We'll read a little bit about verse 8. I thought this was unusual. I've read this a number of times, and it never struck me until this time. "When Israel saw the sons of Joseph, he asked, 'Who are these?'" Verse 11. "Israel said to Joseph, 'I never expected to see your face again, but now God has allowed me to see your children as well.'" The question I have about this, is this the one and only time that Jacob saw those two grandbabies, grandboys? They're grown up now, but is that the only time he's seen them? It certainly looks like it. Verse 12, "The boys have been sitting on Jacob's knees." And Joseph removed them from Israel's knees and bowed down his face to the ground. And Joseph brought them to, that's Ephraim, on his right hand, which is over here, would be over here on this side of the podium, toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh on his left toward Israel's right hand, and brought them close to him. So Manasseh would be on my right side. "But Israel reached out his right hand and put them on Ephraim's head, though he was the younger. So he crossed over and put it on the youngest boy's head. And crossing his arms, he put his left hand on Manasseh's head, though Manasseh was the firstborn." Very unusual. Very unusual thing to be happening. And he blessed these boys right away. Very strange, because in the time of the patriarchs, the right hand was considered the hand of power, of blessing, of might, of energy. And so he wanted, Joseph wanted the blessings to go on Manasseh, his firstborn, but it did not happen that way. Now Joseph see what his dad was doing in verses 17 and 18. He's upset about it, but his dad said in verse 19 that he knew exactly what he was doing, and it is God's will. Dad put the youngest boy ahead of the oldest. Let's read verse 17 and verse 18. Joseph saw, correction, let's read verse 19. But his father refused, wouldn't move his hand. I know, my son, I know. He will become a people. He too will become a people, and he too will become a people. Nevertheless, his younger brother will be greater than he, and his descendants will grow into a group of nations. To a group of nations. And in our booklet, The U.S. and Britain, Britain in Prophecy, we show what can become of these two boys, where they're at today, and what has become of them. We understand that they become Britain, which the sun never has set on that massive empire when you think about it, and America has become perhaps the greatest single nation in history. It's easy to say that America and Britain became great just all on their own. It just happened. However, God is in charge of human events on this earth, and he can set up the nations or bring them down as he chooses. When we look at history, we see that Egypt came and went. They were a huge power at one time. Assyria also came and went. They went down. Solomon, in all his glory, had a nation and had tremendous power. For a little country that size, he could defend himself against larger foes. Well, the Babylonians came along and destroyed his kingdom with Nebuchadnezzar. Then the Persians came along and destroyed the Babylonian Empire. Greece came along and destroyed the Persian Empire. Eventually, the Romans came, and that particular empire lasted a long, long time. Is it going to rise once more? The beast power in Europe that's coming? There's other empires that have risen and fallen, but those are the ones that came to mind at the time. Is America going to follow its turn? Mr. Armstrong told us many times that England would not be a part of the 10-nation beast in Europe in the last days. What happened recently? The English people voted themselves out of the European Union. That's only been, I think, something like 7 months ago that happened. Not very long ago. Okay, let's go to part two. We're going to see what Christ's opinion is on some of these things. Let's go to Matthew 24 and see Christ's warning. Christ's prophecy in Matthew 24 starts out with a warning that it is about not being deceived by anyone. In the end time, there will be so many fake, false, lying, and untrue ministers. And there are many of them are going to come in the name of Christ. I'm going to see that here now. I'm going to read some from Matthew 24. Matthew 24, we're going to start in verse 4. This is Christ's first warning, Matthew 24 and verse 4. He starts out right away and says, "Watch out that no one deceives you, for many will come in my name claiming I am the Messiah." In other words, I am preaching the truth about the Messiah and will deceive many. Christ warns us in 7 verses not to be deceived. From verse 4 to verse 26, that's a total of 23 verses. And in those, there's 7 verses in there that is the paramount thing in Christ's mind, or he wouldn't have mentioned it so often. Yes, there's other things about wars and rumors of wars, nation against nation, and so on. But in Christ's mind, this was the ultimate thing that we have to concern ourselves with. One case in point about deceit. There's a present-day huge church that prays to a woman who is dead. And they don't think anything of it. The Bible tells us that there's no work, no thought, no energy of any kind in the grave. And these people have been deceived by Satan, as Mr. Tower spoke about earlier, throughout his whole message. It's odd how these things just came together in my mind. I hadn't talked to him about it, about his message at all, and yet there's some similarities here. Anyway, that's one case in point right here. How many churches today teach that God's Sabbath's done away? I can't even begin to count them. Or that it's been replaced by another day. Let's go back to Deuteronomy 28. Deuteronomy 28. One of God's warnings, I'm going to go back and read verse 14 about the blessing. You're going to see that this dovetails correctly with what Christ is talking about. Deuteronomy 28 says, Do not turn aside from any of the commands I give you today to the right hand or to the left, following other gods and serving them. Basically what Christ is saying the same thing. There's one and only one Messiah. He's not divided up. He only came once, and that's going to do it for all of mankind, beginning with you and me. Let's go to verse 11 now. Verse 11 of Matthew 24. Here Christ is going on with the same theme. Many false prophets or false preachers will appear and deceive many people. The word prophets can be rendered preachers, but false can be rendered untrue. It can be rendered wicked. It can be rendered as liars. That's the second place that we see that Christ talked about this. Let's move on to verse 23 and 24. This is the third warning. Verse 23. At that time, he's talking about the time of the end. If anyone says to you, look, here's the Messiah, or there he is, don't believe it. Don't believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will appear and perform great signs and miracles. Signs and miracles to deceive the elect. Something so intriguing that even God's people will be intrigued by what they see and what they hear. Some unusual thing happening by maybe just one minister on television. And these things can go on and be deceived, if possible, the very elect, the very people that God has called. Verse 26, this is the fourth warning. Verse 26 says, if anyone tells you, there he is out in the desert, do not bother to go out. Or if he is in inner rooms, don't believe it. The sixth time. Roy Tower already has told us who the great deceiver is. He's the one deceiving everybody. He's the one who is deceiving the whole world. Not just one or two people. The whole world is deceived. Verse 28 is an unusual sentence here, but I wanted to include it. Wherever the carcass is, there the vultures will be gathered. Well, carcass is representative of Jesus Christ, and the vultures are representative of the saints. So when you read it and you say, wherever the Messiah is, there the saints will be gathered. Verse 37 of chapter 24, he's talking about the days of Noah. Verse 37 says, as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Well, what were some of the days of Noah like? Genesis 6 and verse 5. Genesis 6 and verse 5 has an explanation here. Verse 5 says, the Eternal saw how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. The Eternal was grieved that he'd made man on the earth, and his heart was filled with pain. So the Eternal said, I will wipe mankind, whom I have created, from the face of this earth. Now, Noah was a preacher of righteousness. And they saw not only his preaching, but they saw this giant ark. You can read that in 2 Peter 2, verse 5. This thing was 90 feet longer than a football field from goalpost to goalpost. Yet what value was his preaching? What value was his teaching? Nobody followed through on it. They were all deceived. They deceived themselves into not believing a flood was coming. Even though they saw a boat, an ark, longer than a football field right before their eyes, they didn't believe it. An ark. He's going to save us. He'd been building this thing for 100 years. How many people saw it? I have no idea. But here he was building this thing. He got on board and then it started to rain. Well, then they believed it. But it was too late. You see, that's why Christ is saying, don't be deceived. Okay, this is the third and final part. I see that 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1 is no longer a prophecy. It's coming to pass. In the last days, perilous times will come. And this is no longer a prophecy. Perilous times are upon many nations of the world today. Many nations. Matthew 24 and verse 6. Matthew 24 and verse 6, Christ is saying, you will hear of wars and rumors of wars, but see to it that you're not alarmed. Such things must happen, but the end is still to come. Yes, we hear of wars and rumors of wars. The latest rumor now is North Korea. The last missile they shot up went up something like 2,400 miles in the air. If they straighten that out, some have projected that they could reach Chicago with that thing. So that's a rumor that we hear. Syria has used poison gas on their own people. Saddam Hussein did the same thing. He used ricin on some of his people to keep them in line. This week we've heard about Barcelona, Spain. We've heard about Virginia and the killings that have taken place there. We hear about Israel. Seem like they're pounded almost weekly over there. The Gaza Strip, another place where there's all kinds of rumors coming out. Iraq, as I mentioned a minute ago about Saddam. Iran is talking about death to America, death to America. All these rumors going on, and not only that, they're talking about death to Israel. The former leader of Iran had stated one time that if they could take out Israel with their missiles and lose 100 million Muslims, it would be worth the price to pay for that. That's how much they value life. Well, since the turn of the century, everything is getting a little bit worse. That's the year 2000. Verse 7 through verse 10, Matthew 24. Nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines. Yes, there will be earthquakes in various places. All these things are the beginning of birth pains. There was a huge tsunami wave here about 3 years ago that went in and destroyed the nuclear reactor over in Japan. And now some of the fish are being contaminated, quite a bit of it. And this thing is sort of circling around, the waters are, and coming along the Canadian coast, up the Aleutians and around that way. And there's concern that the fish over here may be contaminated in time to come. Let's drop down to verse 12. Because of the increase of wickedness, the love of most will grow cold. But he who stands firm will be saved. Also, this good news of the kingdom will be preached in the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. I'm going to go back to Deuteronomy 28 and verse 43. Deuteronomy 28 and verse 43 says, "The alien who lives among you will rise above you higher and higher, and you will sink lower and lower. He will lend to you, but you will not lend to him. He will be the head, and you will become the tail. All these curses will come upon you. They will pursue you and overtake you until you are destroyed because you did not obey the Eternal your God, observe the commandments and decrees he gave you. These decrees will be a sign and a wonder to you and to your descendants forever because you did not serve the Eternal your God joyfully in the time of prosperity." Mr. Armstrong has said more than once that if he was going to take a nation down, he'd give them more prosperity than they could handle. That's happened to us in Britain. We've had the best of the best. They will be a sign to, and a wonder to you. Oh, I've read that. Okay. "Therefore, in hunger and thirst, in nakedness and desire poverty, you will serve the enemies the Eternal sends against you. He will put an iron yoke around your neck until he has destroyed you." Let's go to Revelation 6. This is where the four horsemen are. Revelation 6. And verse 8. This deals with the fourth and final horseman, deals with the pale horse. Verse 8 says, "I looked, and there before my eyes was a pale horse." John is writing about it, and this is what he sees. "Its rider was named Death." It's the only horse that has a rider with a name. "And the grave was following close behind him." That's very true. When someone dies, the grave is very close. "They were given power over a fourth part of the earth to kill by the sword, by famine, and by plague, and by the wild beasts of the earth." The sword is war. The famine is starvation. People simply won't have enough food to eat because the nations that have it will be in dire straits and not want to release it. So famine will come. Following famine and war, there is always disease that follows that. It's inevitable. And the wild beasts are something that's coming that is still open for discussion. I don't quite know where to go with that, but there's so much going on here in these verses, it's just amazing. A fourth part of the earth. We take simple math, we make it through this. What he's saying is that one out of every four people that I know isn't going to make it. One out of four. That's an astounding death rate. It's unbelievable. If there are 6 billion people today, that's 1.4 billion that are going to die over this. Peter's comment in 1 Peter 5:8 fits this scenario well, in my opinion, and I've included it as my last scripture. 1 Peter 5:8 says, "Be self-controlled and alert." Self-control means don't become hysterical, don't fly off the handle. Don't let anger, don't let hatred rule in your life. Exactly what Mr. Tower was speaking about a few minutes ago. Be self-controlled. Stay calm. Stay normal, because getting excited doesn't solve problems. Usually it makes them worse. We're our own worst enemies, which is something we use out at work a lot. It's a saying we use. Your enemy, Satan the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. I want to close with comments about Solomon. In prophecy, I would like to know who the name of the beast is. I'd like to know the name of the false prophet. I'd like to know the name of the king of the south and the king of the north. I'd like to know where the first battle starts. I'd like to know who's victorious. But all of those are not what it's about. That's why Jesus Christ said in Matthew 24, don't be deceived. When I look at Solomon, he was extremely wise. He had a great understanding of everything. God gave him tremendous wisdom. Not only that, God came to him 2 times in person. 2x he came to Solomon in person. But all of that wisdom, all that knowledge, all that instruction that Solomon gave in the Proverbs wasn't of any value to him, because he married a lot of women. He was a commandment breaker and did not follow God's laws. And personally, I don't see Solomon in the first resurrection. He might be there, but it doesn't look like it to me. So knowing the names of these people is not as important as being close to Almighty God day and night. And that's why Christ put so much emphasis on not being deceived in Matthew 24. Brethren, have a great Sabbath.